Peace, party people. Welcome back to Where My Killer Tape At, Season 9, Episode 149. I'm going to talk about this later on, but today I'm bringing you the big homie, Zemo Divine Power, and we are going to discuss very early the 30th anniversary of Wu-Tang's debut album, Into the Wu-Tang 36 Chambers. We'll deviate from how we usually go. We're going to talk about, you know, the influence of the album on hip-hop music and the industry in general, what the influences were for that album, and we're going to talk about why they were so important and crucial to hip-hop music history. This is part one of a two-parter, so part one, we're going to be talking about the album, and part two, we're going to talk about the TV series on Hulu and the book by S.H. Fernando Jr. entitled The Streets of Shaolin. Definitely got to check that out. We'll let you know when that's coming up, but episode 149, check it out. Killer Tape At, B.
Peace, party people. Welcome back to Where My Killer Tape At, Season 9, Episode 149. And I got the big homie Zemo in the house. What's up, brother?
Now, peace, God. It's all good. We live in full effect. Where My Killer Tape At? It's right here, son. You know what I mean?
And let me say this. Zemo is the one that's always like, hey, the 30th anniversary, the 25th anniversary is coming up. And I'll be like, all right, I got you. And we always end up doing it past the date of when it comes.
Yeah.
So this time we're going to have to do it early. The release of Wu-Tang, 36 Chambers, Into the 36 Chambers was actually released in November of 1993 at the end of the year. But we thought it's fitting that we get on it early. So we're going to go ahead and start. And this is a two-parter. So this part we're going to talk about the first Wu-Tang album. And then the second part we're going to talk about the book From the Streets of Shaolin by S.H. Fernando Jr. and the Hulu show of Wu-Tang and American Saga. So it's going to be a two-parter, so be prepared because it'll probably be a while before we come out with the second part. So the first question I have for you is, how did you first learn about the Wu-Tang Clan?
All right. I want to say I've told this story before, but you know what? For sake of the podcast, let's do it again, even if I haven't. It had to have been around like winter 93. Mm-hmm. It's gotta be January. And I was in Maryland, and you know, we were visiting my godparents, and you know, my godbrother was having like a little birthday, whatever, in the basement, you know what I mean? It wasn't like a party, but you know,
yeah.
We was all like 12, 13 around that time. And you know, one of his homeboys was kind of controlling the music, you know what I mean? and he had Protect Your Neck, the single. And son kept running, and Method Man is the B cut.
Yeah, yeah.
And son kept running Method Man back again and again and again. it was like, if my memory serves me correctly, it seemed like the only song we listened to that night.
Wow.
you know what I'm saying? Like, so if when I'm thinking like really like first memories of like hearing the Wu-Tang Clan and knowing like, yo, this is music by the Wu-Tang Clan, it's that memory right there. You know what I'm saying? Being in the basement, you know, like with people my age, like we were youngins, but yeah, man, Protect Your Neck and Method Man running that single pretty much all night. I really don't remember listening to shit else.
Wow.
But you know, when it comes to like really, really knowing what it is when, you know, later on they drop Cream. You know, once they drop Cream, it was a wrap because Cream was all over the radio. At the time, you know, I mean, you was in the 757 in 93, right?
No, I was not. Yeah, you weren't? Yes, okay. No. I take that back. That's 93? That's what I'm trying to remember because this. I'm trying to remember where I was, and now I know where I was when I first heard it. Mm-hmm. Because the reason why I say that is because when the single first came out in 92, I was out to sea. I was on my 6-month cruise. I was in the Navy, And we left. I want to say it was, and I know there's a lot of background information. Please bear with me, party people. We left. Was it September? It was 6 months. It was September. We came back March. We came back. No, we came back in April because it was after my birthday. We came back in April of 1993, and I had went home, and my brother was like, "You got to hear this shit." And what happened was when I got home that April, I went to New York. I got home. We bought DJ equipment. I had money saved up. I had about 5G saved up, and I bought a whole bunch of DJ equipment. And he was like, "You got to hear this one group." And it was the single "Protect Your Neck," and on the B side was Meth Mat. So I was kind of late in hearing them because they had already in New York City. They had already created that buzz,
right?
You know, so I was like, "Oh my gosh!" I remember. I was learning how to make mixtapes, so I was like, I had a mixtape. I said, I'm not going to release this mixtape out, but I am going to record these two songs, and I'm going to let people listen to it. And I remember coming back to VA and letting people on my ship listen to it, and they was like, they aight. And I was like, wow. I was like, wow. They was like, they aight. They aight. It's aight. I was like, wow, because I was super, super hyped. And then I remember what happened was my ship went to Philadelphia. We got went to the shipyards in Philadelphia back then, when the Navy had a shipyard in Philadelphia. So we left that May. So that's why I had to remember. In May, I was in Philadelphia. And they had caught the Wu-Tang buzz up there. So Wu-Tang, everybody's talking about Wu-Tang up there in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. So I was pretty much immersed in all that Wu folklore up there. Because I didn't move to VA till 96. So.
Okay.
So, yeah. But that's how I heard it.
Well, in the era, you know, 103 Jams was the radio station. And the Buddha Brothers, they had their shows. Rest in peace, DJ Law. They were spinning cream like crazy. And you know, it became what it is today, but it was a movement, and it was moving.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the funny part about that is, well, it's not funny because you know, like back then you only listened to what you owned. You know what I'm saying?
Yes,
so
yes.
Keep in mind, I didn't hear 36 Chambers till after Tikal came out. When I say hear it, I mean like listen to it in its entirety.
Gotcha.
So, but you realize they were pumped. They were pretty much promoting that album like all year though.
Yes.
Like when it comes to like touring videos, radio, whatever, like you still saw them.
Yeah, mixtapes
or whatever. Yeah, yeah. So yeah. I by the time I finally did hear the album, I pretty much had already heard it all. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, Chess Boxing was a single. Wu-Tang Clan and Under F it was, you know what I mean? Can It Be had came out, you know what I mean? Like so I pretty much heard the album, you know, by the time I actually kind of got a physical copy of my own. But it took a while, and Method Man didn't come out till like late 94, I believe.
Yeah, he didn't come out till 94. He was the first one to release the joint. Yeah,
right. So yeah. But yeah, yep. So that Method, believe that Method Man dropping that solo was pretty much kind of the moment where I was just like, yeah, this is the group for me. You know what I'm saying?
I didn't realize until I read the book that the album didn't go gold until a year later.
Right.
You know, from the way I was immersed, I assumed that had went gold like immediately after it was released.
Nah.
You know what I'm saying?
This is back when you had to work the album. You had to work the album while releasing new records.
No, no, you're right. You had to go on tour. You had to push it. There was like a whole machine behind it. But the way it was like, the way you went everywhere, and I'm going to say this. For me, it was the first time I seen women be like, yo, I fucks with the Wu-Tang. Like with underground shit. Because, right, you know, at the time, most women did, you know, look who was out. Diddy and them was out, all of them. So it was like everybody was doing that. Everybody was messing with that. You know, so used to do an underground joint. There was like a niche group of women that got down with it. But that's like the first time. So the way the atmosphere was back then, I had assumed until I read the book, I had assumed that they would go like a couple weeks after they got released. You know what I mean? Because they were big. The way they were doing it, the way they were setting it up. I know they were big on college radio.
Right.
That's what I assumed. So I was kind of like, wow. But I know like everybody wanted to be the Wu. Everybody was dressing like the Wu. Everybody was rapping like the Wu. And that's actually also the first time I've seen people like really go out their way to rap like a particular individual. You know what
big,
I mean?
Big facts.
You know, there was people that was like, yo, I want to sound like Snoop. And there was you ran into those people. But at that time, it was so, Wu-Tang permeated so much. We'll get into this later. that everybody was trying to rap like them, dress like them, all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And I want to say one more thing too, because the question was like, when did I first get into the Wu?
Yeah.
I will keep in mind, like, I just want to, like I said, I told everybody around this time I'm like 12, 13. Mm-hmm. And so like my hip hop journey is still kind of just beginning, you know.
Yes.
You know, in a sense of like being conscious of what's really going on and being able to readily identify what it is that I'm listening to, what it is that I'm participating in. So up to this point, you know what I'm saying, the only rap that I really own and that I'm listening to, it's a lot of gangster shit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, keeping it all the way funky, it's a lot.
I'm glad you said that, because that's the context I want to talk about, what was going mm-hmm. on at the time, mm-hmm. what everybody was rocking at the time was Death Row, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is like early Death Row too. Like,
yeah, it's the chronic. Like, yeah, yeah.
Like America is afraid of Snoop Doggy Dogg. Like, do you understand what I'm saying? Like, it sounds funny now. You know what I'm saying?
It does.
But at the time I'm listening to, you know, Ice Cube is still my man. You know what I'm saying? Ice Cube, Ice-T. I used to listen to a lot of Gangsta Spice One.
Yeah, I did too. Yeah.
Ghetto Boys was in heavy rotation. And like you said, a lot of the you know, of course, the Chronic, Doggy Style, like, bro, it was a lot. MC8, Compton's Most Wanted, bro, like a lot of that West Coast gangster shit. I was listening to. When I say a lot, I mean a lot.
and it's funny because that's what a lot of people were listening to outside of the Tri-State area. I was in the military, so everybody was. They was into that West Coast stuff, hard body, and the South stuff too. You know, Ghetto Boys. The convicts. You know, UGK.
UGK, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody was into that. Like,
keep in mind, I still like, you know, when I heard Dos Effects, they came out, and Onyx was coming out, and Black Moon around the time. I was listening to that too, but if I had my goat, like the stuff that I owned, like when I, like I'm talking like I owned the whole albums, it was a lot of that West Coast stuff.
And again, there wasn't that big regionalism yet at the time.
Not necessarily.
You know,
it was just like,
see, everybody respected everybody's cipher, you know what I'm saying?
It was more so like, are they dope? Does the music bang? Yeah, like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like that's
we don't see the regionalism until the Tupac and Biggie beat. That's when you start seeing regional. But before that, everybody was fucking with everybody. You know,
pretty much.
You open up somebody's you go to somebody's house or you in their car and you open up their rack, you would see that they had like a versatile list of artists from hip hop, you know, from across the country. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like I said, I was at somebody's house and they were playing it. My first question wasn't where are they from.
Mm-hmm.
It was what is this?
It's gonna be.
You know what I'm saying? So
So then we're gonna get into it. I know we're doing it differently. I didn't want to do the usual, you know,
song by song
track. Yeah. Now I'm not talking about the albums that came out after Into the Wu-Tang.
Mm-hmm.
I want to keep everything in context. From when you heard that album, mm-hmm. who were your top three members from the first album? And if you don't have to give me a reason why, but if you want to, you can.
You know what? I was about to kick the Chappelle Show joke, the dial on. Because I instantly just want to say, inspect the deck. But I don't want to shortchange anybody. But number one, if I had to rank, it's number the star of this album is Inspect the Deck.
Okay. Okay.
Hands down. I'm not going to argue with you. I'm not going to argue with anybody. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm going to look you in your face and tell you you're wrong. You know what I'm saying? Like, yo, it's Inspected Deck, hands down. Because lyrically, he tears up everything he's on. He's on all of the hits. You know what I'm saying? And to me, I think he really cemented his mic presence on this album amongst everybody that's on it.
Yeah.
Like, which at the time was kind of like their allure in the mystery of the group, like trying to figure out who's who. Mm-hmm. Well, you didn't have to do that with Deck, because he was pretty much everywhere. You knew, gotcha. Like, he was one of the first ones that you got to know, that's him,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, first I'd say Inspected Deck. Second, of course, I gotta go with Method Man, because, mm-hmm. you know, of course, he had the Method Man single, he does the hook on Cream, and he performs lyrically superb too on this one as well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Whether it's Shame on a Nigga or, you know what I'm saying, Protect Your Neck, like, he kind of steals the show a little bit too. And plus, his voice is just what it is, man. And, you know, and to do that, I can't even call it singy-songy hook, but like, in a whatever type of melodic way his flow is. And then, of course, the ruggedness of the chorus of Cream, you know what I'm saying? Very identifiable. And number three for me is Genius.
Gotcha.
Granted, he's not on many songs on this album. It seems like he is, though. But the reason I gotta say Genius is because those few songs that he's on, it's just like, yo.
He's the only one that has solo joints on this album.
Yeah, I mean, the clan in the front,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So he's the one where it's just like, you know, that's him.
Yeah.
The Wu was too slamming for these cold killing labels. I mean, had hits.
Oh my god, Mabel.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you knew that's him. Oh, that's the same guy that had the song by himself.
Because like, my list is literally the opposite of yours. It's just a meth and death. That's like, it's literally the.
It goes the other way.
I was like, oh shit, like just a meth. And because I felt like Jizza was really the, you know, they you know, meth describes him on the album. He performs the head of Voltron. Yeah. And I really felt that. And you know, and at the same time, I was a big fan of his from his first, I thought his first album was dope.
The Words from the Genius joint?
Yeah, I really thought that shit was dope. I really thought it was dope. Yeah.
If you listen to that joint lyrically, it's dope. Mm-hmm. It's dope because trust me, I went back. I wasn't on it when it first came out.
I remember being on it when it first came out. I remember going to the store and buying it, and I was just like, "Yo, this shit is dope."
Yeah,
and, dude, I remember playing it with people. You know, like I'll be playing it in the background while I was like ironing clothes. People like, "Yo, who's that?" I said, "That's a Genius." You know what I'm saying? And I was like, "Oh wow, he's pretty dope." The single left much to be desired. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was just like, "What are you doing, bro?"
It's like, come on, Shane.
but that's mine. It's Jizza, Meth, and then Deck. And it's messed up what happened to Deck. Like,
truly, man. like when I say like big, like, you know, we got Marvel What If, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's my biggest hip. It's one of my biggest hip hop.
What And if. You know it's what? Definitely... And I'm gonna say this about Deck. He's never put out anything whack.
True.
You know, unfortunately, you know, he's never put out anything whack, and he does the best 16s out of everybody. Really,
yeah, man, bro. Like when his parts come on, I still be like, "Yep, here it is." You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like there he is. Like he's still, to me, he never lost it. He still got it. But in this introduction to the group, like in regards to standing out amongst at the time, well, I mean, Master Killer's only a one, but amongst like the eight or nine other guys, like yo, man, that's a tough task to do. And this is before social media or the internet, so you know. You know, if you didn't have a TV, if you didn't see them in the magazine, or if you didn't go see the show, you really just all you had was the tape and their voices. So trying to figure out the mystery of putting this puzzle piece that was listening to Wu-Tang felt like homework you wanted to do. You know,
what's dope about the group is that it didn't take long to know who was who.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Yeah, it didn't take long to know who was who. But I do also want to say that. They didn't mention this in the TV show, but that was Master Killer. That was his first verse.
Yeah,
his first verse ever in life.
That is so dope.
Crazy.
Too.
Yeah, his first verse ever in life. I was like, wait, he never rhymed before, and I was like, now when I listen to that verse, I'm like, I could see.
Yeah,
I could see because his cadence was different than everybody else's.
You can see how he studied from everybody else too. Yeah. You can see how he just took a little bit of whatever. Yeah, and It's funny because you know Naomi's 13. She's 13 now.
Yes.
And when I be playing Wu-Tang in the car, I'll be like, who's this? That's the game that we play now. Like which one is this? You know what I'm saying? I mean, it took maybe
one listen, and you know who was who.
Yeah, man. That was the fun part of it though. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like really, like trying to figure it out because you felt more in the know, and you felt more connected, and I think that was really their thing. Like trying to figure them out so you could be more connected to the group. And the more connected you were, the more you wanted from them. You know what I mean? So everybody's got their favorites.
Yes, everybody had their favorite. I remember all the debates.
Yeah, yep. For instance, you hear how my list went one way, yours went the opposite way of my list.
Yeah.
I guarantee if you call somebody else, they got a different list. You know what I'm saying?
I have yet to meet anybody that said, yes, I met someone who had like the same top three as I did. No, you know what I'm saying? I never, ever. I ask people all the time. They'd be like, nah, never, ever, ever. Everybody had. And I remember the debates we used to get into, who was the best, and you know, whatever. So it was definitely a time.
Yeah. If you want to have that talk though, I always tell people the answer is Genius. Well, like, who's the best in the group? The answer is always Jizza to me.
Yeah. Yes.
That's always going to be my answer.
And the thing is, all the members of the Wu could tell you the same thing too. Yeah, they could all say Jizza.
Yeah. I'm about to say, you took the words right out of my mouth, and that's the reason why I give that answer. Yes. Because everybody else in the group will definitely say the same thing, for sure.
So, I wanted to flip it. Best mm-hmm. workout song from the album. Like, when you're working out, which is the one that you pick?
Now, I liked this question a lot, yo. Okay. So, because for me, like, you know, I make, like, I make a playlist for running, and I make a playlist for weights. You know what I'm saying? Gotcha. So, like, on my run playlist, yeah, definitely Method Man. Because it's okay. Just because of the, okay. you know, the BPMs of it. You know what I mean? Yeah. For sure. And it's just easy to kind of, like, keep a steady pace while I'm running. But when it comes to, like, working out, like, hitting the weights, like, or push-ups or whatever, it's definitely Bring the Ruckus and Chess Boxing.
Gotcha. I'm really surprised you said Method Man with the running because, like, I love that song, but it's kind of, like, it's such a playful song. You know what I mean? Yeah. Whereas, look, man. Because my pick is the Mystery of Chess Boxing. Because that shit, okay. No matter where it comes on, I'll go hard. I go fucking hard. Yeah, so if I'm not feeling it, like if I'm like, damn, cuz I'm not gonna make this last 20 minutes. Play this song, and then it gives me that, it puts that battery in my back. What were you about to say? I'm sorry.
No, I was gonna say though, it's mainly because it's so playful that I put it on the run playlist.
Gotcha.
Like sometimes like when I'm outside and you know, like putting one foot in front of the other becomes a chore.
Yes.
You know
what I'm saying? Yes. Yes.
And, but then I'm running and rapping at the same time, and it becomes a little bit more fun. You know what I mean?
Okay, gotcha.
That's just me, though. But yeah, when it comes to like we hitting push-ups, burpees, or whatever, or hitting the weight bench. Yeah, Bring the Ruckus and Chess Boxing, hit hard.
Yes, yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes. So my thing is Mystery Chess Boxing. Always hits hard. Always
yeah, man.
I want to do Mystery Chess Boxing at a karaoke. So I just gotta find oh, yeah. 7 other heads. So like, yeah.
I mean, yeah. If I'm there one day, you know what I mean?
Yes, sir. Okay. So aliens come down to land on Earth, and they like, yo, we heard about this Wu-Tang. Can you give us some more information? What would be the first track you would play from the album? From this album?
From this album, it's gotta be Protect Your Neck. Come on.
Okay. Man. Okay. You know
I mean, like,
I agree.
It's gotta be Protect Your Neck because it's. What's become, I'm not even sure if they meant to do this, but it's kind of in a way become the quintessential posse cut.
Yes, it is. It is at a standard.
You know what I mean? Because you think about everything that came after it, yep. in the sense of like crews, you know, conglomerates, groups, labels, etc., whatever you want to call them, they all pretty much did their posse cuts this way. Now that they knew that they could put this many people on one song. Mm-hmm. And get away with it. Before what the I'm sitting trying to think like
no because you have Scenario, right?
Yeah, I was thinking about Scenario. I'm thinking like Don't Curse with Heavy D and everybody. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to think like posse cuts with a lot of people.
No, you picked the right one, but I think what it is that Scenario set a standard.
For sure.
But Protect Your Neck was like you have to bring your A game. You cannot be in here if you cannot protect. And what I learned was there was supposed to be other artists on here.
That's crazy.
But they didn't. They shit wasn't popping. You know? Right. They shit wasn't popping. So it was kind of like you had to bring your A game or you wasn't getting on. But what I like about this single is it's my pick too. It's because I used to get tired of like, you know how somebody released a single and you'd be like, oh, this shit is banging. Mm-hmm. I'm expecting the same level of intensity. With a couple of songs, like I expect a love song. I expect an introspective song. I expect a deep, you know, Black Power song. But when your first single comes out and I'm like, oh, this shit is dope, I'm kind of expecting that same level of intensity. And I think this is the first time I heard something that when I bought the album, they kept that energy level on the entire time. Again, you're going to have your love joint. You know, you're going to have your less laid back shit. You know, Cream is very introspective. Canopy Also Simple was very introspective. You're like, that made you think about growing up in the hood and all that stuff. But everything else was like, boom, boom, boom,
high
boom.
Energy.
And you just, it was high energy. Like, so I was like, that shit. So again, I know that if I play that single towards the alien and then they pick up the album, they'd be like, okay, this is right. This is definitely right, you know?
Right. Yeah. Like I said, it set the standard for posse cuts after it since. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yes.
And in regards to how many MCs you can have on a track, and two, like you really fucking better bring it.
Yeah, you gotta bring it again. Yeah,
like ain't no like no weak links. Ain't no weak links here. To me, everybody's part is right on, man.
Mm-hmm. All right, so this one, once I sent this out, I was like, damn, there's only like two. But the best introspective song on the album, you know, for me, it was Can It Be All So Simple.
Yeah, it's a good one.
And it was kind of like, because no matter when that song plays, I pause. No matter where that song plays, I pause. And if I'm listening to the album, I'll skip it if I'm in a particular mood and I don't want to spoil the mood. You know what I'm saying? Especially as I've gotten older and I think about certain heads that I used to roll with. So,
Ray got real deep on that joint.
Who
else on the record was saying my pops was a fiend since 16? You know what I'm saying? Shooting at that shit in his bloodstream.
Yeah, man.
I'm like, worm? like nobody just makes that up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I can get real imaginative with my rhyme and get creative, but like shit like that, like, yo, son, you only speaking that if that's real.
Exactly. Put it out there like that.
That's
something you really want to share. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that because to a lot of these brothers. Just, you know, a lot of these MCs around this time, I don't know if they knew this, but this was, I think the MCing and the music was very cathartic and very therapeutic for them.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
But the Wu members have always expressed that in all the interviews, you know, from the beginning of time, of how therapeutic it was for them to do that, you know.
Yeah, man. I can only imagine them walking around in life holding all that in.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying, man? Like, who knows what type of people they might have become if they never expressed it, you know what I'm saying, through their gift of rhyme. See, I appreciate Can It Be. Yeah. My pick was the other one, though. My pick was Cream. Because, I mean, one, you know, Inspector, and you know, like I say, he was my favorite on this album. So I had to pick something with him on there. Mm-hmm. And once again, and Raekwon again, too, getting deep with it. I think just the fact that they made a song about struggling, the hardest shit in the streets.
Is
mind boggling.
It is.
The song is really about struggling.
It's about struggling. Yep. Yep.
Like that. That's all it's about.
Yep.
And they gave it one of the most catchy hooks. You know what I'm mm-hmm. saying? Which is still mind boggling to this day. But like, yo, you feel it, man.
So I agree. They made, you know, the hook, and they made it something that you could, you know, like that. It was played on the radio consistently. You know what I'm saying? Amen. And a lot of people could relate to it, no matter what coast you was from.
Yeah, man. Like, it's and funny thing, it's a slow record too, man.
Yes.
It's a slow record.
Compared to everything else. Yes.
But it still hits hard, and you know, the lyrics hit even harder.
Definitely. Jacob and now we're gonna talk about the makeup of the album. What were the RZA and the Jizz and everybody, you know, what were they referencing throughout the album? You know, and of course we gotta always start with the Shaw Brothers. A lot of the clips were from Shaw Brothers movies. In particular, they cover a lot: 36 Chambers, Flying Guillotine. You know,
Shaolin vs Wu-Tang.
They cover a lot of that stuff, but for a lot of people, you know, Shaw Brothers movies were the shit. Whether you had a chance to see them on 40 Dudes or you saw them on TV, I know some malls, I remember traveling through the country and some malls were selling VHS tapes of all these movies and you can cop them and watch them. But everybody was watching them. You know, I don't know anybody who was not watching them.
Bruh.
You know?
Look, man. Anime was kind of like, had its little boom in the early 90s as well. So watching a lot of anime.
Anime was very niche.
You're right. That's saying. So it was me and like a handful of people that knew about it. You know what I'm saying?
And matter of fact, it wasn't that cool to watch anime back then.
Tell me about it. I have to explain this to everybody. I'm like, yo, I walk so you can run, son.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you realize, like, when people found out Zemo watched the Japanese cartoons, it wasn't like a popular thing to do. Like, you know what I'm saying?
It was not. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Right. But between watching a lot of anime and the kung fu joints, like son, that's between me and my core group of friends, like that's a lot of what we did, man. Like definitely, like I'm hooking up the renting videos, hooking up the two VCRs, you know what I'm saying, dubbing copies, mm-hmm. or even going downtown Newport News. There was this guy off of 33rd Street. He used to, you know, dub the, you know, he had Laserdisc copies. He dubbed them on VHS, or he did the same
oh,
thing.
Wow.
Up, or
wow.
he did the same thing, hook up the two VCRs and make you a makeshift cover. You slide them five. He charged 10, but if he didn't have 10, man, like, come on, son. Like, you know, I got 7. He take it.
Oh, wow. You know what I'm saying? Wow. He was looking out. He was looking out.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, because, yeah. we came back faithfully. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. yo, man. But yeah, like, yeah, man, I got a lot of good memories watching like Mystery Chess Boxing, 7 Grandmasters, Shaolin versus Llama, Fist of the White Lotus, Shaolin versus
Five Deadly Venoms,
for sure. Like the list goes on, man. Kid with the golden arm. Mm-hmm. Like there's a lot of good ones.
Yeah, they got mad joints. They got mad joints, and it's like, and it's funny because I remember like showing it to my children, and they was like, "What? Why are they making so much noise when they fighting? You know, like when they just saddle boxing, they're like, and they was like, what are they doing?" And I was like, but they ended up. It's funny because like they do enjoy it, but when they were younger, they were so critical. But now they really do enjoy it. And it's actually what I liked it was just the stories that they told.
For sure, man.
You know what I'm saying? Like the stories definitely. That they told.
Yeah, a lot of them. Yes, they do lay out a good narrative. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't sleep on that. But to incorporate that into the music though was different.
Different.
Hadn't been done. Cause I'm sitting here thinking like Wu-Tang Clan ain't nothing to fuck with. Starts with Tiger Style.
And then
here comes the RZA Tiger Style. Like what? Like who thought the song thinks to start the song like that? You know what I mean? Or even just the album itself.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Exactly. Yep. And the wild part was I didn't know that one executive passed them up because they were like, oh, they're doing that karate shit. The Fushnikas do that. And they was like, no, the Fushnikas don't do that. They just had one song where they did that. And, you know, but they assumed that they was trying to be like the Fushnikas. So they passed them up. They passed them. I was like, I didn't know that.
Oh, man, you had one job, buddy.
Yeah.
You, like, I didn't know that. Like, you had one job. You fucked up. Oh man!
But I really appreciate how they incorporated like, because a lot of us were dabbling in all of that stuff. We was dabbling in, you know, anime. We was dabbling in Shaw Brothers. We was dabbling in Nation of Gods and Earths. You know, the lessons. We was dabbling in you know underground hip hop. We were dabbling in all these things. We were dabbling in. So to have a group that was doing all those things together, there was referencing comic books. You know, like They were all dabbling in all those things, and to put it in one album that was never done before by anybody, you know.
Yeah, because those were definitely in regards to like the last question in regards to cultural influence, all of that. Whether
it's, cultural references,
cultural references.
The influences will be what happened afterward. Like, you know,
okay,
you know what I'm saying?
To have all of that, like you said, in one group in their music.
Yeah,
like I think at the time you were usually kind of like one thing or the other.
Exactly.
Or, you know what I'm saying? Like, X-Clan was X-Clan. You know what I'm saying? Ghetto Boys were Ghetto Boys. You know what I'm saying? You didn't get a Ghetto Boys type of song on an X-Clan album. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and
vice versa. I don't know why those were the first two groups of names to come to my mind, but you know what I mean? But just in regards to, like, to show you how far away on the spectrum that they are from each other in regards to content and sound. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But Wu-Tang kind of brought everything together because, like, you know, just being a young black man is just a complex thing as it is.
Very complex.
You know what I mean?
Very complex.
We influence so much and we're influenced by so much. So why not put it all in the music?
And I'm glad you said that because it's kind of like a lot of us was, you know, like, but everybody was dabbling in it. It's just they didn't put it in their music.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
No, you're absolutely right.
You know what I'm saying? Like a lot of us were dabbling in it, but you know, they're the ones that was like, oh yeah, you know, Return to the 36 Chambers is my shit. And you're like, oh shit, that's my shit too. You know what I'm saying? I do watch Ghost Rider. Like I'm a fan of Ghost Rider. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Oh shit, but nobody would put that in their music. You know what I'm saying? Like, but they put all of those hobbies, they threw it all in their music. And a lot of, every now and then you have an artist who made a dedicated song to a particular cultural reference, You know what I'm saying?
But so it wasn't their style.
It wasn't their style.
Like, yeah. It didn't encompass their whole style.
Exactly.
I think that's the beauty of Wu-Tang, because even with all of those influence, everybody expressed themselves differently.
True indeed.
You know what I'm saying? And it was up to you as a listener to, you know, I mean, of course, yeah, you could pick your favorite, but I know people that say, I've met a person that said, like, yo, I only like Wu-Tang when they're together. like straight up, I only like them as a group. Like, I like the solo stuff is cool, but nah, like, if it's not them together, I don't want to hear it. Mm. I was like, oh, I mean, to me that was just an interesting take. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I know for a lot of us, it's difficult to, particularly when you see a group and then the group splits up, it's difficult for us to, like, the best example I could give you is Rage Against the Machine. You know, when they split, it was like
Audio Slave.
Audio
cool.
Slave was okay. It was all right.
Audio Slave is cool, but it's not.
You know, when Zach De La Rocha went solo and he was doing cameos, it was all right. It was like, and they started doing experimenting. It was like, you know, when Tip went off on his own, it was kind of like, what are you doing over here, brother? You know, so it's like, it's hard for us as fans to. I'm used to seeing all of y'all together, and now when y'all split up, not saying that this is that I'm still used to seeing y'all together. So I think that because I know a lot of people told me the same thing too. They was like, you know, I like when they're all together, all the whole squad, and I'm like, oh shit! So they were really anticipating the second album, you know?
Yeah, man. Yeah, so. I think of course, you know, power, strength is in numbers. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I think just that the showing of that brotherhood and that unity, man. People want to see that, man. It's inspiring. You know what I'm saying? I don't think sometimes these artists realize, like, how much of an effect it really does have. You know what I mean? Like people seeing that and knowing that it's real, like knowing that camaraderie and that togetherness is genuine. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like they weren't just like, you know, some label just didn't put them together.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Exactly. Like, you know, like you know, reading some of that book right now, realizing how early on some of them knew each other. I'm just like, yo, this is like this is real dope.
And they were all trying to get on very early. Like, they were all trying to get on very early. So, yeah. So, and I'm glad you pointed that out. And because you're right. But a lot of groups, like, when I hear about different groups, a lot of times they'll add a second or third member, somebody to label. Like, we got to put y'all together. And you'd be like, right. Oh, shit. Like, you'd be like, oh, like, you know, like, I didn't know that. I thought y'all was always down. You know, so it is.
Nah, we just thought this would be a good fit.
Yeah, it happens quite often. It happens quite often with a lot, you know, R&B groups, rock groups. They're like, we got to get you another member. And you're just like, I thought y'all was always down. Like, oh, no, you know, so this is a group that came up together. A lot of them were related, you know.
They put their peoples on, too.
Oh, my God.
They put their peoples on.
Yeah, they put their peoples on all the time. It was like, you know, I was like, hey, that's ODB's cousin. That's his brother.
Right.
I was like,
yeah,
oh, exactly. Like, yeah. So it was crazy. But I think you're right. It's dope. I think that, and we're going to get into their influences, right? Now, how they influence the industry and everybody else. And I think, honestly, I don't like to use the word brand. I don't like to use that word because it's very corporate.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the first time we saw on a mass scale that they said, this is our brand. The W, that's a brand. You know what I'm saying? And when we saw that on an album or a comic book or a t-shirt, you knew that shit was quality. Yeah, yep.
Yeah, look. Let me tell you how serious it was, man. So you realize, like, when Wu-Tang's peak, I'm a teenager, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't got, like, no steady job, but, you know, I earn little money here and there, you know what I'm saying? Whatever. I kept $10 in my sock drawer. I called it my Wu-Tang emergency fund. it sounds like I'm bullshitting, you're saying?
No, I believe you. I believe you.
I lie to you not. I kept $10 in my sock drawer, so, like, if a tape dropped, hear what I said now, a tape. Because I had a CD player. If a tape dropped, I had money to go get it. Whether it was a single or a maxi single or EP or whatever, or if it was just something affiliated by Wu-Tang, if it was a magazine with Wu-Tang on the cover or something like that, I had money to go get it. I don't think you know how disciplined I had to be as a teenager to get $10 for myself, yo.
And you know what?
But it's because I trusted the, like you said, I trusted the brand though.
And the reason why I bring you on the show is for context, right? Because there wasn't no internet. You know what I mean? You ain't know when shit was coming out. You know, get me wrong. The record stores will say, oh, you know, next week so and so comes out, but that shit, sometimes you pull up and they were wrong. Nope. You know what I'm saying? But just you're right, having that emergency fund. And I want to point out that, you know, which the TV show does a great job, you know, of showing, demonstrating how quickly they were putting all these albums out and how, you know, how the RZA and his brother had a timetable of what was coming out. And if they met all of that, but that was unprecedented
at nobody that was
time
doing
in
that.
The industry. Nobody was doing that. You know what I'm saying?
No, it was either you was a solo act or you was a crew. Nobody really did both. So the whole, matter of fact, in regards to like how they shifted the culture, it's the obvious. The whole thing with the way their record deal was set up.
Mm-hmm.
Signing them all as a group with the option to sign every individual member to another label.
Yes.
What label does that, bro? Like most labels, they want to hold on to everything. They want to hold on to everything.
To everything. And the book gets into it. You'll see in the book.
Okay.
It was Steve Rifkin. It was really Steve Rifkin. It was like, I want to sign this guy. Because I didn't know who his father was. Right. And then he was already cutting his teeth in the industry as a teenager. He saw the whole shit, how the whole shit worked. And he didn't like it. And he said, I'm not going to do this to people. I'm not going to, you know what I'm saying? And he got that from his dad. His dad was like, I'm going to look out for the artist. He's like, I'm not going to do this to people. But he also was like, I know these guys are dope. I'm going to do whatever I can to sign them. You know what I'm saying? Right. So, and then it's that incident that, you know, where he threw the chair out the window. Where that was a reason for that, right? It was Steve Rifkin. He was like, I'll do that. I'll take that risk. And it paid off, you know. But it was unprecedented. No, don't get me wrong. I know that George Clinton did that with his group, Parliament Funkadelic. He did that. So it wasn't the first time it was done. It just wasn't done at this scale.
Right.
And it wasn't as successful as the Wu-Tang was. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it paid off for everybody, you know.
Yeah, because I just look at every other crew or labels, for lack of a better term, like strategy post-Wu-Tang.
Yes.
And basically it was just to do what Wu-Tang did.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? We got a compilation or we got a group project and then, you know, such and such coming out and then this guy comes out and then we got a girl too. She's coming out. Like, you know what I mean? Like, everybody was doing the Wu-Tang thing in regards to the moves they made.
And I'm going to say this. There was a time in hip-hop music where you could only dream of guest spots, right? You could only it would be dope if Rakim and Big Daddy Kane did a song. And a lot of it was label shit. A lot of it was label red tape.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of that shit was red tape. But when the Wu-Tang did it, everybody else had to do it. Everybody else. And I started to notice that more and more people started having guest spots. You know, which led to the mixtape movement later on. Where, you know, DJs were getting signed artists to come rap on these shit. But the Wu-Tang was the one that kind of like set the precedent for that, you know.
For sure, because, you know, the beauty with having that many members is you kind of really don't need to call nobody.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Like you, you. I don't know if you ever heard Method Man tell the story about how he ended up on Biggie's first album, but
he did.
He was just like, he had to sneak and go do that because RZA was like, yo, we're not fucking with nobody.
Mm-hmm.
Keep all the money in here. Like, you know what I'm saying? I remember when Raekwon Purple Tape came out and I seen that Nas was on there. I said, what?
Yes.
I said, what is going on here?
But you know, he was on, is this allowed?
They was on
my Beats album too.
For sure.
You know, the Raekwon and Nas, and that shit was dope. But you started to see more of that start to happen and the red tapes to give away because it was like people want to see features, people want to see other artists come together. And you didn't really, like I said, people were doing it, but not at this scale. And then everybody started asking for Wu-Tang mix. I want so-and-so on my Wu-Tang joint, you know.
I want a Wu-Tang sounding song on my
album. Oh, my God.
So let me call such and such.
Bruh,
it was everywhere.
It was everywhere, yeah.
Everywhere.
Meth was everywhere. ODB was everywhere. Like,
yep.
You know, so it was kind of like, you know, but I think that was one of their biggest influences, changing the industry, how people did business, how people collaborated and all that stuff. And everybody, a lot of people try to emulate what they did. I know, Master P, you know, he emulated what Wu-Tang did. And
definitely.
He created a brand, you know what I'm saying? Yep. No Limit Records. It was, a, you know, so like, yeah, so it was kind of like.
Yeah, whether he knows it or not, that's what he was doing.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like to have the okay or the confidence that this will work, yeah, it's already worked over here. You know what I mean? So, Wu-Tang did that.
Yep.
For sure. Ain't no question. You just got to put out a product that, you know, people like. Boom.
Exactly. Anything else you want to add on before we close out?
In regards to like the early stages of Wu-Tang, nah, man, I'm pretty sure we'll probably get into it. You know what I'm saying?
You'll definitely get into it in part two, yeah.
In part two. But in regards to 36 Chambers, man, like it was just such a special time for me personally.
Same here. Same here.
Like you know, and we were both at different points in our lives too, which just goes to show you the power of the culture and the quality of what was coming out of the culture at the time. I always say that to people because, you know, like by the time I met you and by the time I met Johan, you realize I was still a teenager.
Yes, he was 15.
Right?
15.
I'm 15 and y'all are like 24,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I was 24. Yeah.
So, and I tell people, okay, you realize when I met these guys, we're both listening to the same stuff, right?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It wasn't like
going to the same events.
It's yeah.
Going to the same concerts.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like you're saying culture now. We're not just saying sitting at home listening to music. We're talking about culture now.
Being outside. We were outside.
Yeah.
So I'm so glad that I still have the relationship I have with you. I need
same
to,
here. Same here. 100%.
And I need to try to find Johan.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
For sure. But just knowing y'all just really like fortifies and validates what hip hop should be.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Because I'm just like, yo, like you gotta realize like these cats were born practically almost a whole decade before me.
Mm-hmm.
But we love the same thing because of what it is.
And that's in a way
I don't wanna shit on new shit, but in a way that's kinda what the new hip hop is missing.
I agree.
You know what I'm saying? Like for real. And in the same way I didn't know everything that y'all knew at the time, I had y'all to show me.
True indeed.
You know what I'm saying? And I wasn't like, nah, fuck that old EPMD shit. Wu-Tang. Like, I was like, nah. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can only imagine how y'all would have looked at me if I said some dumb shit.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, nah, that was never my attitude. It was just like, oh, these guys, they got more experience with this. I need to be close. You know what I'm saying? I need to stay close. And that was always my attitude, because I knew if I could hang in a cypher with Johan, by the time I went back to school to the lunch table, I'm dusting everybody. I'm dusting everybody.
And again, the reason why we're on the show is for context. That's the whole reason.
Yeah.
I mean, I love having you on the show. You're dope. You add so much flavor. But it's for context. It's got always... Because a lot of times we take these albums and we forget the context of it. So when I'm talking to like my children or my students and they bring it up, I'm like, hold on, you gotta understand what was going on at the time.
Right.
For you to understand why this happened and how it went down the way it did. We didn't have the internet. You know what I mean?
Right.
We didn't have easy access. Everything was physical. You know what I mean? We read the liner notes and we got involved in who they were shouting out. Who is this person? You couldn't send a Twitter to Method Man. You know what I mean? It wasn't like that. You know what I'm saying? Right. It just wasn't. It was a different time. So there's always got to have context when it comes to this album. So once again, I'm going to urge our readers for part two, and we'll let y'all know when it's coming up. You don't have to read it, but I recommend reading From the Streets of Shaolin by S.H. Fennec Jr. It's a great read.
Yeah, it's good so far. Word up.
It's a really good read. You will definitely enjoy it, Zeebo. I'm telling you, you're going to enjoy it. And then... If you get a chance to watch the Hulu series, highly recommend it.
Right.
Wu-Tang American Saga, because they kind of play hand in hand. We want to kind of go over all of that stuff. And it'll be a dope discussions as per usual before the next one. We'll let y'all know what that is. Any shout outs you want to give out before we head out?
Nah, man. Just, shout out to my family.
You have another baby on the way.
Yeah, man.
Bro, congratulations, man.
Talk to all my children, to my wife, Mecca.
True indeed.
Yeah, man, we finally got our boy, man. So
true indeed. Good times. So yeah, but I'm glad everybody's okay. I'm glad everybody's healthy. we good on this side. Everybody's here. And we're definitely going to have to link up.
Definitely got to come through and see the new crib, man, for sure.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So, all right, man. Peace. Thank you.
Peace.
First of all, thank you for listening to Where My Killer Tape At. You could have been anywhere else, but here you are. So I appreciate your support. I know I've been saying this every year, but I'm still trying to sell 100 coffee mugs. The link is in there. It's from Cafe Press. Please support the podcast. I wanted to remain as independent as fuck. Now, if you want to continue the conversation, you can do it on Spills or on Threads. And just make sure you hashtag Where My Killer Tape At. Killer is spelled K-I-L-L-A. You want to get a hold of me, I can be found on Spills at Dan Trezomi, on Instagram and Threads at Brother Omi, and that's BROTHEROMI. Dan Trezomi is spelled DANTRESOMI. So definitely support. Go to the website, omisbench.com, OMIS bench, BENCH.com, and all my information will be on there. Thank you for supporting the show, and we'll see you next time. Peace.